Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Women's Soccer Zone. My name is Kieran Tavam, and as always, I'm joined by my good friend JJ Duke out in Connecticut. I remembered this time, mate. Not New York.
There you go.
Connecticut. How are you, mate?
Yeah, you're about, 40 miles or so from New York City, so the greater metro New York area. But I'm good, mate. Happy to be back.
Good man. And obviously, we are delighted, as always, to be joined by our listeners, because without them, this show is not worth doing. So thank you, as always, for tuning in. This one is even more unstructured than it normally is, I must confess. When you listen to most podcasts or most shows, people will have a running order in front of them. I never have one written down. We kind of go with the flow, and this one is no different. We are going to talk about some of the internationals that have been going on. England have had two games in the last few days against France and Spain. I speak to Jasmina Schweimler on this show about Germany's recent fixtures against Austria and against Holland. We get Anthony Hesch on this show as well from our friends at Footsdell. Obviously, with England-France playing each other, I wanted to get his view. And speaking of England-France, I was there at the game in Doncaster, and I managed to catch up with their defender, Laura Georges. So we hear from her about how she's enjoying playing under a new coach and playing with some new players around her as well. We'll also cover off some other areas of the game that are going on at the moment, most notably some loans that are taking place between the NWSL and the W League, which we see quite regularly. One player that won't be going to the W League this year is Kim Little, who obviously played with Melbourne City FC. She made a high-profile move to Arsenal Ladies recently, so I caught up with her coach, or her new coach, Pedro Losa, who of course made that move happen. We'll cover off anything else that comes to mind over the course of the show as well. When we come back, we'll talk about the two friendlies that England have had most recently.
Women's Soccer Zone would like to thank our partners, She Kicks Magazine. Subscribe at shekicks.net for even more women's football.
So JJ, two friendlies for England in the last few days. I know that it's very difficult for you to kind of keep up with some of these games because of the lack of access. I didn't even get a chance to see England against Spain because the game wasn't broadcast over here. I was at Doncaster's Keepmoat Stadium on Friday. I saw England play a 0-0 draw with France. There was 96 minutes of football. There were two shots on target for France. There were no shots on target for England. It wasn't the greatest game. Not a classic in the slightest. Not much attacking football. But I guess, looking at it from our perspective, from a media perspective, the important thing for both teams probably was not to lose.
Yeah, not to lose, and I think no risking any major injuries. Obviously, look at England right now. They're just about ready to head off into their winter break, which obviously this time next year, we're not going to be having that anymore. And for France, you know, we're right in about the middle third, maybe just still in the first third of the season. Champions League matches are coming up again as well. So, yeah, I think it's no lose. Don't get anybody seriously hurt and you're going to be all right. Obviously, with the England team and France team for the most part, I don't see many changes, if really any at all. So, yeah, it's just we don't get to talk about this a whole lot, Kieran, but I know you and I were chatting before the show. Sometimes, and more often than not, you have them in men's football where you have those sort of dead rubber friendly matches where you're there, you're playing, you get some minutes, you get out. Might have almost been the same thing here.
Yeah, I think you're right. Obviously, France are playing under a new coach. And actually, we were laughing before we came on the show about people butchering individuals' names. And the new French coach, who of course replaced Philippe Bergeroux, Olivier Échouffani. I've probably got that wrong. I did meet him in Doncaster, and the French press officer said his name, obviously, absolutely 100% accurately. I'm pretty certain that I've just got it wrong, so I apologise to any French listeners or anyone who follows the French team. But obviously, they're looking to impress him, aren't they? And I spoke to Laura Georges after the game, and we'll hear from her in a minute. And she was saying that, obviously, he's coming with his own ideas. Still very early days, but for them, the last thing that those players want to do is make a bad impression in front of a new coach, because with the young talent that France has, they could be out before he's even had a chance to settle in.
Yeah, you know, that's why there are friendlies at some points that are more important than others. Obviously, you have those that are gearing up for major international competitions. Both England and France have already qualified for the Euros. France, obviously, coming off of yet another fairly disappointing major tournament result. But this is kind of those little bit of lull times where, you know, for England right now, Mark Sampson has his stamp on that team. So if the only way to really impress is by doing it week in, week out with your club. For France, it's a time right now for players. I think it's more to not play bad than to play fantastically well, because, you know, as time goes on with the new head coach coming in, they'll have a chance to look up and down club form, who's performing week in, week out, and how that will carry over into the national team. But if you have a bad result or two on the big stage, and if you're a player that's sort of been on the fringe for a little while now, yeah, that's going to be one that will really hit you a bit hard, at least the one that you wouldn't like.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the French team did have a number of first-team players missing. There was no Marie-Laure Dely, there was no Amandine Henry, Camille Abelie was missing, Elodie Tomis was missing. But I tell you what, mate, I got to see Laura George and Wendy Renard play up close for, I think it's only the first time, or certainly the second time, I saw England play France in the Cyprus Cup about 4 or 5 years ago. But those two are dominant. I mean, England played one up front. Rachel Daly was so isolated. She was given barely any service. She played 58 minutes and she didn't get a sniff. And it was really disappointing because, you know, Rachel's bided her time and waited for her opportunity. It was her fourth cap, and for 58 minutes she fed off scraps, and Nikita Paris didn't get much more for the 20 or the 32 minutes that she got as well. And it was a shame because it petered out a little bit. You could kind of tell that despite both coaches saying they were going for the win, I didn't see a huge amount of endeavour to go for the win. I think both teams were probably content with a 0-0 draw, and I think it's one of those where neither of them will look back on it as a classic, and I don't think it defines how they will line up for the European Championships next year. But as I mentioned, I did manage to speak to Laura George after the game. She spoke to the English media afterwards, impeccable English. I think she may have gone to college in the United States during her earlier days of her career. So she had a chat with us after the game. So here's what she had to say.
Thoughts on the performance this evening in France?
The first half was pretty good. We were able to play, to make them to put them in a difficult situation. But the second half was pretty hard for us because we lost so many balls. So we kind of frustrated, but it's still a nerve. So yeah, we still need to work. But England is a pretty good team, improving each year. So
is a disappointment not to create more chances?
Yeah, it's more about finishing. Yeah. We are disappointed because we could, and we had opportunities, but we couldn't finish. The last pass was missing.
That's been a problem for France in the past. What has Olivier sort of said or done in training to change that?
So it's pretty new. It's only the second camp with the new coach. Yeah. So we've been working on the different positioning on the field, but I guess we will be working on the offensive side, yes.
And what's your thoughts on this England team? They've sort of been improving year on year. What do you think of them and maybe their chances in the Euros?
It's a really good team. New players, it's a young team. They have young players. It will be a tough opponent during the Euro. I guess every team, they will have the chance to win the title, but will be many who wants to win this title, so it's going to be tough.
How different is it, Laura, as one of the more experienced players? You've seen a few coaches come and go for France. How different is it working under Olivier? What has he done differently so far? I know it's early.
It's one of the questions that every journalist is asking us those days. And I always respond that it's pretty hard to already say that he's acting like this. So it's different from the other coach because they're different. it's different person, so the way we are going to work is going to be different. It's someone who likes to talk to the team, who likes to talk to the player. So we will see. He's been a professional player, so I guess he's going to give us his own experience. He likes to share his experience, so this is what I can see from the beginning. So then we will see. I guess we will keep working like we used to work with the other coach on some tactic aspect, and nothing is too different. It's just the people, the way they animate the trainings.
played Brazil, you've played England tonight. Yeah. How important is it to play opposition of this level going into the European Championships next year?
It's always good to play like good teams so we can see at what level we are. But I don't really... I'm not a big fan of playing teams that we're going to play in a final tournament. It's always special. Because when you win and then you have them, it's always a revenge. So I'm not a fan of playing a team and that we will have maybe in the final tournament. But this is how it is.
You have a very settled defence with yourself and Wendy. And how are you enjoying the newer players that are coming in, maybe in other positions? There was a lot of different players that were on the bench today. Mm-hmm. A few of them were introduced, the same against Brazil as well. Mm-hmm. How different is it? Maybe not, we've talked about the coach, but how nice and how different is it with all those different players coming in?
We have a pretty new players because we have injured players too, but we have good players coming in the team. It's always like an adjustment to do at practice. And then during the games, it's a lot of communication. It's good to learn to play with other players because in final tournament you never know. Someone get injured, then you have to be prepared to play. So you need to know about the players with who you play. But those days have been like a lot of changing position and different system. Last time we played three in the back, today we play four. So, but yeah, it's always good to play with different players.
Merci. So that was Laura George. JJ, we'll move on very shortly, but I did get our friend from Futsdel, Anthony Resch, on the phone to talk about the England-France game. I wanted to get his views and what the French media make of the new head coach that's come in. So here's Anthony. Okay, so for our French section of Women's Soccer Zone, he hasn't been on the show for a little while, but I'm joined by Anthony Resch from our friends at Futsdel. And Anthony, last week friends became opponents as England took on France, and a 0-0 draw, 0-0, not the most entertaining game, not the best game that we will see. What was your opinion, what was your view of the game between England and France in Doncaster last week?
You know, in France, a game between England and France is always a great game. That's this match was not very interested. Was disappointed. I was very disappointed. Annoying. I know why for the French team because. You know, there is a new coach, Olivier Chouafny, a young coach, and he is trying to develop his management, his game project, and there were many players of the French team were absent, Camille Abili, Amandine Henry, Elodie Thomas, and Marie-Laure Dely. And that's why this game was not very, very good for the French team.
But we saw a number of younger players get their opportunity, like Diani, Toletti came on, Dibihan came on, Cascarino. Is this something that we may see more of? Because we are seeing some of the players getting a little bit older. He may well look to bring in some of the younger players. Do you think this might be something we see more of moving forward?
Yes, but I'm thinking that in the French team, when you are playing for a French team, you must play very well about technical and physical items. And during this game against England, it's a fact there were many young players. You say the Khadija Toudiani, Delphine Cascarino, but there is a problem with this team. We have the feeling in France because we are feeling that the team is not a real team, you know? There is a special feeling, but a bad feeling with this team 1 year ago. And during this match against England, this feeling is repeating match by match.
Okay. So there's a feeling that the team is not quite there yet. The team is a little bit...
not quiet. And this team is just a team with the official name. But within the team, there are not a very special relationship between the players. And many journalists, many French journalists here say a lot of time the French team, or in the French team, there are many good players. But we cannot win any trophy. There is a big problem in this team.
Okay. It's interesting. I think what you're trying to say is that there's not that chemistry there. The team are not a team at the moment. It's players within the team. They need to get to know each other. They need to get to know each other's different style of play and try and blend together as opposed to...
There is a problem which is existing 1-2 years ago, but with a new coach and many new young players, this problem is growing this week.
Yeah, it's going to take time. What was your view on the appointment of the new head coach? What was your view on losing Philippe Bergeroux and the new coach coming in?
Olivier Chouafny is a good person. He was a good player with a career in France. He played for Nice, Olympique de Marseille, Rennes, many good clubs. But there is a great question about him and his faculty to coach a national team. Because in his career, he has coached only two clubs in France and in a subdivision. Not at the top of a French division for the men soccer and not for the women soccer. So it's his first experience in women's soccer, and he working discovering the women's soccer in France. And for the moment, many journalists, many French journalists are expecting about Olivier Chouafny.
Okay, well, plenty of opportunity to talk about France moving forward. They must have, much like England, friendlies in the lead up to the European Championships. Yeah. Talk to me a bit about what's going on in the French domestic competition. We're seeing Lyon once again showing how good they are. PSG PSG don't look the team that they were last year. They obviously had a bit of a scare in the Women's Champions League when they lost to LSK Kvinna in from Norway in the first leg, but came through in the second leg. What's your take on the domestic season at the moment?
If I may say so, this season is not a surprise because Olympique Lyonnais is on the top on our French division, and moreover, this season is very particular for the PSG, Paris Saint-Germain, because you have a new coach, many new players, and Patrice Lair is a great coach, and he's working a lot with his players. And I'm thinking that Paris Saint-Germain to win one competition in this season. Why not? But obviously, Olympique Lyonnais is the first and will be first for many years.
And how about their performances in the Champions League? Do you think that Lyon are still, obviously as the holders, still the team to beat? Do you think PSG could perhaps, you say they might win one competition, could PSG be the surprise team in the Champions League?
Yeah, I agree with you, because we know that Lyon is the big favourite for a competition, but Paris Saint-Germain... can create the surprise this season.
Okay. Well, they were very good in that second leg. Christian scored an incredible hat trick in that game. Absolutely ran the show in that game. One thing I forgot to ask about the French national team, and I'll finish on this question. The new coach has not only brought in young players, but he's also brought back Gaëtan Tine, who fell out of favour with Philippe Bergeroux. What's the view about her coming back? What's your view on Gaëtan being back in the team?
About Gaëtan Tine is a great question in France now. I'm thinking that Gaëtan Tine deserved to be convocated in the French team because she's a great player. But with a new coach, she gets a new opportunity to stay in the team because, you know, during the Women World Cup in 2015 in Canada, his behavior was very bad. And now Gaëtan can play a great job for the team from today to the European Championship in Netherlands.
Okay. Well, it was good to see her back. She didn't have quite the impact that I'm sure that she would have liked against England, but I'm a fan of Gaëtan, and it's good to see her back for the right reasons. So hopefully she'll be in that team for quite some time. Well, Anthony, it's always a pleasure. I'm disappointed that England couldn't overcome France. It's been too long since we were able to get a win over the French team. You still have that hold over us, but thank you very much for joining me. We'll get you back on soon and you can keep us up to date with how things are going in France.
Thank you too.
So big thanks there to Anthony. JJ, we'll move on from England very shortly, but followed up the game against France with a 2-1 win in Spain. Now, Spain, like England, had a very good qualification period for Euro 2017. Many expect them to do well in the Netherlands next year. Got some talented players, we know that from what we saw at the World Cup and the last European Championships. To go to Spain and win 2-1 after, I think, what would be fair to say, a below-par performance against the French at home last week, that shows character and it shows that England, again, need to be looked at as a team to be fancied for the Euros next year.
Yeah, you know, kind of wanted to go back to this point quickly about, you're talking about that kind of dull game that you had between England and France. Look, at the same time, also remember, qualifiers for both England and France for the Euros, they've played a lot of matches where they know that they come in, that they're a supremely overpowering team against what England was playing Estonia in a couple of those matches. And you know, not just to say them, but there are a few other teams as well. I just can't think of them off the top of my head. But then you have a match like this against Spain, who they're not France. France know that they are a top team. No matter what the competition is, they're going to be feared as a team that will, you know, no doubt be in the running for the title. Spain is a team that's still trying to prove themselves. You know, they have talent. We've seen that. They've gotten some better results and, you know, are getting more confident as they go along, like you said. And I think that was a match if England wanted to take, not to say more seriously, but to look to get themselves a real test and a real result. You go on the road to Spain, not sure what type of environment it was, but still, you're not playing in the comforts of your home country, but you go and get a road victory. I think that's one that if England wanted to get something out of this camp, that was probably it. And a 2-1 result definitely shows that.
Yeah, absolutely. Unfortunately, the game wasn't broadcast over here in England, so I only managed to see bits and pieces of it. But Steph Horton scored a beauty of a free kick in that game, I will say that. And I think going into the last friendly that they have of the year, well, certainly the last one that's scheduled of the year, in a few weeks' time away in Holland, the hosts of the European Championships, it's a real confidence boost. And as I said, I think it shows character to come back from what is a personal opinion. I think they were below par against the French. I know that France are a very strong team and England's record against them is not good. But I think the result in Spain is something to build on and something to be positive about. And I'm sure Mark Sampson will chop and change his team around a little bit in the coming matches that precede after this one. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that one pans out. But good result for England. And certainly I'm sure Spain will be disappointed, but they still have a long way to go before the European Championships to get things right. I mentioned in the intro that obviously Germany have had a few friendlies as well. We're not going to talk about those ones because I caught up with Jasmina Schweibner. They had two games against the Netherlands, and they also played Austria in warm-up matches for the Euros next year. So here's myself and Jasmina having a chat about those two games. Jasmina Schweibner, welcome back. It's been a little while. We're going to have a little chat about the German women's national team. Of course, it is life after Sylvia Neid. We now have Steffi Jones in charge of the team. They've had two games in the last few days. They beat Austria 4-2, and they beat European hosts for next year, the Netherlands, 4-2. You saw, I know, most of the game against the Netherlands and saw the game against Austria. How are Germany playing any differently under Steffi Jones to what they were under Sylvia Neid?
Well, first of all, I'm so happy to be back. secondly, I don't really think they play that different. It's just Steffi Jones, I always said that she likes to focus on young players, and she brought in a lot of new players. And I think that's what made it really different. You know, Svenja Huth, who has been outstanding in the Frauen-Bundesliga, finally gets time to play. Same with Lina Magul, who played a very strong game against Austria. And even Jennifer Marujan is finally unleashing her full potential now that she's captain. So they play differently, but I wouldn't say that it's tactical changes. It's just that the girls who finally get to play are just so passionate about it and so happy that they get the chance.
It must be kind of reassuring from a German perspective that these young players are moulding and blending in very quickly, because to lose players like Saskia Bartusiak, Annika Kran, Melanie Behringer, all at the same time, three very experienced players, they're big shoes to fill. So it's encouraging that these young players are stepping up very quickly.
Yeah, of course. But then again, these young players take responsibility in the Frauen-Bundesliga. Lina Magul at SC Freiburg, for example, is taking a big role and takes responsibility, leads the team. Same with Svenja Huth. She's the ultimate striker for Potsdam. So she just, the fact that they bring that into the national team is actually very exciting.
So what did you make of the two games? I know we've said that they're not playing hugely different to what they did under Sylvia Neid, but if there was one thing that you take from the two games against Austria and Holland, what would it be?
I would say the future is bright. That's what I would say, yeah.
Why?
Because I'm just so happy to see our young players getting a chance to shine. I mean, Lena Petermann got subbed in and then converted a penalty. She just took it. She didn't even think about it. And that's what I really, really like. The fact that our young players now take responsibility. It's just so exciting to see.
And one of their more experienced players, although she's still, I guess, in comparison to some players in other teams, still relatively young, Jennifer Marajan has been named as Steffi Jones' captain. Obviously, we mentioned that Saskia Bartusiak has announced her international retirement after the Olympics. They had a vacancy for that captaincy. They've given it to Marajan. What was your reaction when Steffi Jones announced her as their new skipper?
Well, I didn't see that one coming. I was expecting either Schuld or Mittag or Laudea to be captain, but then again, it kind of pushed Marujan forward. She played excellent games. And that's what Steffi Jones actually said. She said that she made Maru captain so she can finally, you know, unleash her full potential. And I remember that we talked about Marujan during the Olympics and how disappointed we are that she's not, you know, taking as much responsibility as we would like to see until the final. And I think the fact that she gets so much trust from Jones is just going to push her forward, because she always played such good games in Frankfurt, and now she fit right into Lyon. And if she does that at the national team, then yeah, that's good for her. That's what's been missing, and now it's finally happening.
Do the Germans have any more games before the end of the year scheduled? I think they have. They've got Norway on the 29th of November. That will be an interesting one, won't it?
Yeah, I think Norway are very strong and a team that's going to play a big role in future. So I'm excited to see that.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us.
as always, plenty of German football to come. Of course, Wolfsburg and FC Bayern Munich are still in the Champions League. They have the last 16 coming up in November. We will speak to you about that soon. And of course, the goings-on in the Frauen Bundesliga as well. Jasmina, thank you very much for your time.
I'm excited about being back. Thank you.
So big thanks there to Jasmina. JJ, while we're staying on international football, should we have a very brief mention of another European nation, Switzerland, who are, of course, playing in the United States over the last few days. Two matches, a 4-0 defeat and a 5-1 defeat, or if you want to say 5-1 win and 4-0 win for the United States, bearing in mind that that's where you're from. I mean, I know you didn't see the games because of work commitments and a few other things. I did. Very straightforward. Very, very straightforward for the US. I was surprised, especially in the second game, how poor Switzerland were defensively. I know the United States, when they get going, can overrun and overpower teams, but Switzerland made it quite easy for them in that second game in particular. But for anyone that didn't see it, describe Carly Lloyd's goal in that second game.
You're asking my definition or what they actually said? Because I think really what they said might be better, where her goal had no regard for humanity. And now that is a phrase that has been used before in American sports. Can't finger exactly when it originated, but it was more for a basketball term. But yeah, I mean, she was set up beautifully, had a look, 35 yards out, might as well have a go. And we all know that Carly enjoys scoring that goal from distance, and that was just a fun one to watch because she hit it about as perfectly as you can ask for, and you only get that in your dreams, and she got it. And, you know, again, the U.S., I think, they show that they can rotate, and they can still come out and perform against good teams in these sort of atmospheres. Now, obviously, the Swiss were a little bit under in terms of their, you know, where they wanted to be. With their roster, obviously Ramon Bachmann, the most significant absence due to, I believe it was injuries or just coming back from injuries, didn't want to fully run out without being at 100%. But yeah, still at the same time, the U.S. played new player after new player after new player. And for a lot of people, including myself, have been waiting for this for a long time, Kieran. We finally got some new blood in the system, and they showed up.
Talk about some of that new blood. Ashley Hatch, I don't know if Ashley actually made any appearances in the games, but we saw
Andy. She did. Played in the first game.
She did. You're right. She played in the first game. We saw Andy Sullivan. We saw Kayla Ojai come on and score within 47 seconds or 48 seconds of her debut. We saw Lynn Williams come on, and I think she was a second slower scoring on her debut. Yeah. Abby Dolkemper came on as a substitute in both games. Talk about the impact that, you know, they've had and the significance of seeing so many new players.
It is, and also Casey Short and Aaron Gilliland as well out of Chicago Red Stars getting opportunities. And look, I think it's time right now. It's time that Jill Ellis is, you know, to put the phrase, put the money where her mouth is, because she's been saying for a long time, well, the league is a tool for her, an opportunity to look at players week in and week out, the league being the National Women's Soccer League. Now she finally goes ahead and does it. I know what the circumstances were. She was brought in just about a year prior to the World Cup back in 2014. Only had limited opportunities to look at the team prior to World Cup qualifiers, and then goes straight into the Olympics. So I understand where you're playing with limited resources in terms of how many players you can have on the field. Obviously, you knew that players are going to be retiring after 2015. Mallory Pugh, I think, is the lone exception because she played herself onto that team in 2016. I think also Crystal Dunn as well, just by her performances. But then, you know, you look past that now, and now it's an opportunity. Okay, there have been some players on that team, Kieran, as you very well know, who have been running ragged for the past 3 years. Give them a break. They're not going to be missing anything in, you know, in terms of major implications on their roster status right now. But you have these matches, you know, against Thailand. You have the match against the Netherlands, which I thought was still a fairly decent match last month. And then you have these matches against Switzerland. You still have a couple more friendlies to come up against Romania as well. These are opportunities to give some players, and especially some young ones who have either excelled in both the professional ranks or still at the collegiate level, Andy Sullivan and Ashley Hatch, both college players, and they've been excelling this season. They deserve to get a look. And I think maybe we might even get a few more of those, perhaps, depending on how the NCAA tournament shakes out for that November camp.
Well, let's hope they use a few more young players because, as I said, 9-1 on aggregate against a good team like Switzerland, who did admittedly have some players missing, is a good return. But they, as you mentioned there, they play two games against Romania, and Romania need to pick themselves up because on the day that we're recording, they've just missed out on a place at Euro 2017 next year. They've lost on away goals, of all things, over two legs to Portugal. So we're talking about a team that, with the greatest respect, aren't even good enough to qualify for the Euros. I think they ranked 21 places below Switzerland, and now they've got to try and go to the US and play two matches against a side who are going to be playing players who feel that they have something to prove, because then the opportunities that you get for the US as a new player, we've seen it happen before. If you establish yourself, you can be in that team for a long time, but if you don't make an impact early on, it might have be, you may have to wait quite a long time to get another opportunity.
Yeah, you know, I think the US, I'm not sure what the schedule is going to be looking like for them next year, obviously, with a year that there is no major international tournaments. Obviously, what my understanding is, there will be another edition of the She Believes Cup next year. At least one thinks that that's going to happen. That's obviously pending, excuse me, with all these collective bargaining agreement things that need to be laid down. I'm not a legal expert, so I'm not going to talk about that because I would just be confusing myself in trying to make sense of it all. But, yeah, this is an opportunity for these players, you know, who are on the cusp of making, you know, a proper roster. And when I mean a proper roster, I mean a competitive match roster, whether that be World Cup qualifiers, World Cup, Olympic qualifiers, Olympics. A chance right now to at least lay down a little bit of groundwork. And I know this is almost kind of going against what we said just a little while ago and talking about England and their team and also France as well. But I think it's almost two different mindsets in the sense that the U.S., not to say that England at the moment are very deep. They have a lot of talented players, but there are just so many players right now in the U.S. that say that, well, we have a shot of playing on this national team. So if you get the opportunity, you have to take it, plain and simple.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And we mentioned it briefly there. Congratulations to Portugal. They now are the final team to make up the 16 that will compete in Holland next year at the European Championships. The draw for that takes place on the 8th of November in Rotterdam. We will, of course, cover that as soon as it's happened. If you go onto UEFA's website, you will be able to see the seedings. I know that in Pot 1, it's England, Germany, the Netherlands and France, I believe, are the four teams in Pot 1. So it's going to be interesting to see how that one pans out. JJ, there was a couple of other friendlies that took place that kind of caught my eye. So Belgium beat the Russians 3-1. I watched Norway against Sweden this week as well in Norway, finished 0-0. Not the greatest game, but certainly no lack of effort. There were certainly plenty of opportunities in terms of efforts on goal, but cancelled each other out, both good in defence and weren't able to get the attack going as maybe as well as they would have liked to have done. And you know, that Sweden team, we saw it in the Olympics. You know, they had Lotta Schelin missing, and I think Neela Fischer was missing as well. But they have lots of good young players coming through. Some of those young players play for Linköping, and we have to mention that Linköping have won the Damallsvenskan. And when they come up against a team in the shape of Rosengard, and well, let's mention Eskilstuna as well, who are in the Champions League this year, have come through into the last 16 as well. We have to applaud them, don't we? I know we don't get to see a lot of Swedish football, sadly, because of the coverage or lack of it in the US and the UK. But impressive from Linköping, because they've been neck and neck with Rosengard for quite some time. They managed to pull away, but importantly, they managed to stay pulled away as well.
Yeah, I think that's all it is, really. If you have that opportunity to jump out and hold on to that as long as you can, I think that's a big plus. Linköping, as you said, they're going up against two giants in that league. I mean, maybe not so much Eskilstuna right now, but they're a team that's definitely been on that elevated platform for a longer stretch of time. But then Rosengard, it speaks quite simply. All you have to do is just take a look at the roster, and it's a who's who of international superstars. And to say that they weren't the champions speaks loads. And Is 2016 the year of crazy football, Kieran? Obviously, we already have Leicester and the men's side winning the Premier League, and all of a sudden now you're having teams that may not have been considered fully as the champions. Maybe not so much here with Linköping, but still, that is an upset.
Yeah, and it's not a bad shout. I mean, I wouldn't say there's been huge amounts of crazy football, but we're seeing some teams maybe pull off things that we weren't expecting. We're looking at, in England, Manchester City looked like potentially they could go the whole league season undefeated. We're looking at Germany, Tabina Potsdam, coming from nowhere. They're doing really well early doors. We were expecting the likes of Wolfsburg, Bayern Munich to be the teams that led. France is I don't really know what to say about France other than it's going according to plan. But then you've got, you know, the NWSL, Western New York Flash, creep into the playoffs in the last couple of weeks and end up winning the whole championship. So don't even have to use Leicester as an example, mate. There are plenty of examples in the women's game that exist already. And, you know, Sweden getting a silver medal at the Olympics and the United States and Brazil going out early doors. There's been some interesting stuff this year. And I think we'll maybe do a little bit of a review maybe around December, January time, just to look back on 2016, because there's certainly been plenty of talking points. But we'll talk about Linköping more in a future show. I did want to try and get a player on this show, but as soon as they won the league, a lot of their players went on international duty, so it was difficult to pin someone down. But obviously we've had players like Pernille Harder on this show before, so maybe we'll try and get Pernille back on to talk about that league title victory. But I think it might be worth us having a bit of a break, mate, and when we come back, there's been quite a lot of activity between the NWSL and the W League, and I think it might be worth wrapping that up very, very quickly. So when we come back, we'll have a look at some of the moves that have taken place.
Women's Soccer Zone. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSOZone.
JJ, the NWSL finished for the season, but as we see quite commonly after the season has been completed, because of the way the domestic seasons are laid out, we see between kind of March, April time through to October, the NWSL take place. And then from November, December time through to January, February, we see the W League in Australia take place, which allows players from both leagues to kind of interchange and go into each other's domestic competitions. The W League starts in about a month, 6 weeks. And there are a number of NWSL players that are making a move. Do you want to give a little bit of a summary of what's been going on?
Yeah, so, you know, again, I'm not totally knowing of everything that's going on in the W League right now. Obviously, the big hat tip at the moment to looking at the women's game for their always up-to-date Season 9 squad list. But, yeah, there's plenty of NWSL players, whether they are Australian-born and coming back to their native land, or U.S. domestic players who are traveling abroad. I mean, you have the likes, just to go down the list really quickly, and this is as of yesterday. So on Brisbane, you've got Maddie Evans from Orlando, who's traveling back over, obviously, on that team. Also, you have the likes of Mackenzie Arnold, Katrina Gorey, Claire Polkinghorne, all on there. Canberra, you have Ellie Brush from Houston on the team, Celeste Boure from Portland, Yukari Kinga, nice little shout there from Japan, of INAC, Jasmine Spencer of Orlando, and then domestic Michelle Heyman is on there, Haley Rasso also from Portland, Ellie Brush on the team, and then obviously I think we're going to hold on to one of the two Melbournes till the end, so we'll skip over City for right now. Victory, their usual surplus of internationals, Tash Dowie, Bianca Henninger, Sam Johnson, Christine Nairn, from the U.S. coming over. Newcastle, Megan Oyster from Washington Spirit. I hear that there may be more players on the way. Not confirming that, at least on my end right now. Perth Glory, Vanessa DiMonardo is going. Sam Kerr will rejoin Perth. Alyssa Mott and Nikki Stanton from Sky Blue. And from Western Sydney, Alex Arlett, Kendall Fletcher, Paige Nielsen, Katie Stengel from the U.S. and Australian national team players, Ellie Carpenter, Caitlin Cooper, Casey Dumont, all there. And Sydney FC, while they don't have any Americans, they still have a few national team players. Kaya Salmon from Boston, Lana Kennedy from the reigning NWSL champions, Western New York, and Caitlin Ford. But I think this brings us to our interesting point about Melbourne City. You look up and down that team, obviously the champions last year, without losing a game. And I think, what was it, Kieran? They have scored their opposition like 36-2 or something along those lines. Some ridiculous number like that. Lou Barnes and Jeff Fishlock coming over from Seattle. But there's one player who's a little bit missing from that team that was there last year, and you have more on that.
Yeah, Kim Little. Kim Little played in Melbourne last year, played for Melbourne City, was, I think, player of the year. Certainly, she was the Women's Games player of the year, and you made a good reference there, mate. And I think we don't pretend to know everything. I think it's impossible for two people to cover football all over the world. The Women's Game down in Australia is the outlet to follow for Australian women's football. Absolutely no doubt about that. If nobody, or if people have never heard of them, or if people are not following them, make sure you are, because they have people all over Australia who cover each individual club, and their coverage is unrivaled. It's absolutely second to none. So definitely worth following them. We will get them on the show at regular intervals during the course of the season. Erica Timrakers, of course, is another one that's just been confirmed to play for Melbourne City as well, mate. And I think, I don't mind saying it, I think the Women's Game have said that joining Megan Oyster in Newcastle, I think, with Sam Johnson and Erin Gilliland from Chicago. So it'd be interesting to see how that one works out. But yeah, coming back to Kim. Kim obviously made a high-profile move from Seattle back to Arsenal last week, and she'll be joining the club in January 2017, and obviously that means it makes things difficult for her to go back to Melbourne. And she'll be a big loss, no doubt about that, especially when you think about how the relationship is between her and Jess Fishlock in midfield. So yeah, Kim won't be returning to Melbourne City this winter, or certainly it doesn't look like she'll be returning to Melbourne City this winter. And the move to Arsenal obviously made a lot of headlines. Coming back to England is a big statement for both Arsenal and for the WSL. And I wanted to chat to Pedro Losa, the Arsenal coach, about the move and a few other bits and pieces as well. So we'll wrap up our chat on the W League. As I said, we'll get the Women's Game on and talk to them a bit more about it over the coming weeks. But for now, here's Pedro Losa having a chat about the move for Kim Little and a few other bits and pieces about Arsenal ladies. Right, Pedro Losa joining me on Women's Soccer Zone. You made headlines last week. You broke social media when the news was confirmed that Arsenal ladies had brought home Kim Little to North London. Tell me how that move came about and how pleased you are to get someone who's very, very highly thought of in not just in Arsenal, but in the WSL and across Europe as well.
Well, obviously, I think since the moment when Kim Little left this club, probably the big idea it was and the big objective was to bring her back in some moment of her career. I think, as you know, top players and players who has been a legend in their clubs, like in this case, we have Kelly Smith, for example, in our club. They come back to home, and they come back to the club where they have been promoted, but also where they have been successful. So it's been a long journey working hard in terms of we knew that the experience of Kim in America has been fantastic. The impact of Kim in Seattle and in the league has been unbelievable. I was lucky to be there also in some moments when Kim arrived, and we were rivals in some moments, and she was an outstanding player, and also the spirit that she had with Laura, which probably made her more confidence to grow in that team and in that league. So I really think they played a fantastic football for a lot of years. I had also this conversation with Laura, even in the worst moment when the first year was not probably the best starting, but I really valued the kind of football she was trying to implement, and she did a few years later. And I think they have been, independent of winning the league or not, they have been the best team for a few years, and Kim has been playing a massive role, obviously, on that team, with players like Jess Fishlock or players like Winter. So they have been the main tools for the team to win trophies or to win games and to play the football that they wanted to play. So from that one, obviously, Kim, not just number one objective for us, and you know, probably has been number one objective for a lot of clubs in around the world, Obviously, her link with the clubs is still there. She's a player who feels the values and she wants to do the right things. And obviously, we have been working on that one since he left. Not just since I arrived to the club, but also when I arrived to the club was one of the our objectives, and we could make it possible. The agreement just a few weeks ago, and we can make it we made it public last week, and we are very proud and happy about that one.
It's one thing to want to try and sign a player like Kim Little. It's another thing to be able to convince her to sign. How difficult was it? How many conversations did you have with Kim? And you know, what was the main thing that convinced her to come back?
I think probably the link with the club was always there. Obviously, when she was off season, she was always asking permission to come here to train with the team, and we were very happy to keep her here and help her to be fit to come back. So that was, I think, from that one, she had always the link with the team. I think that she never lost it. And obviously, just to convince a player like that is just to affect her mentally and in the way that you convince her that this is the right place, that this is, we can make her a brand of Arsenal. And also the way that club is moving in terms of facilities, in terms of professionalism, I think it has been a massive part of her decision, and she is believing that we are the best for her future, and we are very proud of that one, and we are going to work harder than ever to respond to those expectations, not just from Kim, just from obviously from the rest of the players. So obviously in the off time she came a few times to train, every season she was doing that one. But the Seattle knew about that one, and so that was not a problem. In any moment was any kind of bad game or about trying to bring her here. She was coming, she was leaving, she was coming. She's not a player who is used to play that kind of game, and I think that means a lot for her, also how she is as a person. And from that one, we managed to negotiate with her in the right time, when there was another offer, obviously, really important from Europe and from England. And she really liked it, the way the club deal with everything, with starting from our executive director, Ivan Gassidis, with going to Claire and a few conversations that we had. She felt that we deal with everything the right way and the way that she wanted to do it. And she was very pleased, and I'm very happy about that one.
We'll talk about the shape of the squad for next year shortly. I know we've obviously seen some departures since the news that Kim was coming back had happened. Where do you see her fitting in, Pedro? I know it's difficult at this early stage because I'm sure the shape of the team will look quite different next year, but you've got an abundance of attacking talent, the likes of Daniel van der Donk, who you've maybe played in a position that sometimes is similar to that of Kim's. You've still got Kelly Smith at the club. How do you see Kim fitting in next season?
Well, I think it's a way to... Kim needs to fit very well in any team in the world. I think this kind of player that they come to your team and they look like they have been playing for you for all their life. And she is, as we all know, is a number 10 with a big character on the pitch, with capable to lead the team, capable to read situations that nobody else probably can read, and she is capable to score goals, but also to affect the game from another actions, and just not just affect the game, but also affect the team. So it will be something to decide in the future if we are playing with, like you say, Daniel van der Donk or Jordan, or a player like Farah Williams in that number 10 position. But I think the player needs to play in their natural position. This is how they give you that level. So we will try to manage and to put the players in the right position, but especially Kim.
When was it that you decided that you wanted to go and get Kim? Was it in response to kind of the season that you've had with Manchester City and Chelsea, Man City in particular, being so dominant? When was it that you identified Kim, that you needed to bring her back, or you wanted to bring her back?
No, I think it was, this is even from last season, in terms of this club has a fantastic history, but also it's time to move for the future. So how can we move for the future? It needs to be with Arsenal values and the way that we want to play and the way that we want to act also and the way we want to operate it. So I think we have players in the system like Jordan Ox, like Dan Carter, like Leah Williams, young and ready to for the next challenge in terms of leadership, but also I think the big one probably can be Kim in terms of successful, in terms of character, in terms of her quality on the pitch. So that's the main part, just to bring players who can. It's not just about signing good players, it's about the values of the clubs and do the right things and the way we operate. So we thought that Kim was the right player for that one.
You mentioned earlier, Kim is the type of player that can really fit into any team in the world, and a player of her quality is very difficult to leave out. You've had this year quite a big squad, and I'm sure that there's going to be turnover. We've, as I said, we've seen the three Spanish players are departed, or certainly two of them have departed already. How do you kind of keep everyone happy moving forward? Because you've mentioned Farrah Williams, Danielle van der Donk, Leah Williamson, Kim Little, there's Jordan Nobbs. There's bound to be other players that you're looking at ahead of next year. I know there's still two games left of this season. But how do you kind of keep everyone happy, and how do you decide what your best team is in terms of the players that you've got available to you?
Well, I think it's everything. For me, everything has a vision. And since I arrived to the club, my vision was that we were very short in numbers. When I arrived, we had a squad of 18 players. When some of them, they got injured sometimes, and as you know, there's always something that the players are not always healthy to play or to train every day. And we found a situation when we were almost training with 10 players on the pitch, and the other players, for any reason, they couldn't train or they were injured. And we thought that it was important to create a dynamic when players from the development team could jump into the first team, and we can have a team training, not just 10 players training. I don't think there's any way to improve 10 players on training. So from that one, we moved players from the development team. All these years, they have been joining regularly to give them the culture and the education. From that one, yes, we had a better squad or a bigger squad, but the reason is also because some players, they can't manage to train regularly, because some of them, they probably had, they're at the end of their career, so they can train from Monday to Friday, and obviously it's difficult to manage that workload in a performance or team environment to improve. But at the same time, we want to have them in the club, and we wanted them to be able to bring the talent that we have. And the big example can be, for example, Kelly Smith, which is a player who has been phenomenal for us this season, but she may not be able to train Monday, Tuesday, Thursday and Friday. And we have to accept that situation. We want to deal with that situation, but at the same time, we want to create a team environment when the young players can improve and can have this requirements that they need to develop. So, this season we had a big squad, but probably it's not the most ideal situation, but that's what we thought that we needed to move forward for the future. And on that one, obviously, players like Jordan Nobbs and Carter, who just they mean the values of the club, or players like Leah Williamson are helping us to move the club forward. So this is the reason, because of we had a big squad. So how you keep everyone happy, I think it's impossible. I think the players who are on the bench, they are always not happy, and that's part of football. And also the players who are playing, they will be happy, but until the next day when maybe you decide to give them a break or maybe put all the players. And this is part of professional football, and it's maybe one step that we have to give for the future, just to have that mentality to accept a situation where we can be one day playing, another day not playing, also because we have to deal, like we are in this week with international break, and we are losing 13 players, and then we have to deal with that one also too, and we have to prepare a game against Doncaster. We don't know what players are going to come back healthy, and we have to deal with that situation probably from Wednesday and decide until Sunday who is playing, who is not playing. And that's part of this war, and that's something I have been doing for all my life.
Yeah, not ideal. I know that. I know international weeks can be beneficial, but they can also be difficult as well. I mean, you're very honest there. You kind of said that maybe the size of the squad wasn't wasn't ideal this year. Obviously, you had the problem last year where it was too small, and maybe this year where you have maybe one or two too many. Is the key next year then to try and get that balance right, where maybe you won't bring as many in, we might see a few go, but it's about getting not just the numbers right, but the balance of the squad right?
Yeah, I think that's obviously the key point. The 2 years before, we had a lot of injuries, key injuries. We lost, for example, Jordan Osso for a long period of time. And this year, we have been lucky in not having any big injuries. Just the big injury has been Leah with the surgery that she has in her ankle. But the other player has been fit to train and to play. And obviously, that's a good thing. But at the same time, it causes you the problem that you have to decide. So I think it's more about, for us, it's more about moving forward to the future with the right values, moving forward to the future with the players who really want to play for this club, and I think this club is big enough to be able to decide our future and to create a line where we can make the fans happy the way we want to play, and also we can look for trophies which we were capable to win this year, the FA Cup, and we're looking forward to repeat it every day.
I mentioned that obviously after the signing of Kim came out this week, it was announced that the three Spanish players, Natalia, Marta Corredera and Vicky Lozada, will be leaving the club. I know as a Spanish coach, I'm sure that couldn't have been an easy decision, but maybe could you give us a bit of thinking as to the three players leaving beyond this season?
Well, yeah, obviously when you are at the end of the season, you have to make decisions, and I think every player who has been part of this club, at least since I've been as a manager, they have been playing a big part of everything that we want to do in terms of progress and create a professional structure and the right environment for the players. For me, they were a massive support, obviously, in terms of the idea that we wanted to bring here and how we wanted to play. But it's true that at the end, the players, they look for minutes and they look to play. So Natalia was not having too many opportunities to play in the last season. Marta, it was in the same similar situation, and also with Vicky, obviously I think she's a phenomenal player and she could stay here for a longer time, but with players like Tim coming, Jordan, we couldn't find an agreement together, and it's the moment to thank her for all she did for the club, and she can probably find a club where she can bring her character, her quality, and keep progressing, which is something that she's still young and she can probably play in a fantastic level for a lot of years.
I would never be cheeky enough to ask any players that you're interested in or players that might leave, but do you see a different squad next year to the one that you've got this time round?
Yeah, I think it's obviously it's our moment to give opportunities to young players. It's our moment to progress, and some of the players that have been here, like I mentioned, Jordan and Dan Carter, for a long time, probably they have to be part of this project, and this is just football. I think it's, the young ones, they need to have opportunities in some moments, and also players like Tyler Hines or players like Lothar Waffenboy, who have been playing the U17 in a good level, are players that we look for them for the future and the future of this club. And I think we have the obligation to move forward.
Women's Soccer Zone. It's all about the players.
So big thanks there to Pedro. JJ, a bit disjointed this one, I don't deny it. We need to plan better. Completely my fault. But we'll wrap it up, mate. Just one thing that I want to mention. Obviously, we have to say congratulations to the Korean DPR, or Korea DPR, because they won the FIFA Under-17 Women's World Cup in Jordan last week, beating the holders Japan on penalties in the final. Not exactly an upset as such, JJ, but a little bit unexpected, I guess.
I mean, it depends on almost kind of how you look at it. I know Japan, obviously, very strong in their own right at the youth level, but North Korea for a very long time and traditionally at this U17 level, they're always a team to beat. I don't know how, because you know, if I remember my stature being in the United States, we get zero access. Not sure how much more access, Kieran, you get over there about North Korean women's football, to be straight. But
none.
Yeah, they've always seemed to be a team that is right there in the youth ranks and obviously Asian power as well. So, yeah, I mean, you know, that definitely looked like a good battle, a good match to watch. Obviously, from my vantage point, I was a little more enthused on Dana Castellanos and all the magnificent skill and goals that she put on throughout that entire tournament. Obviously, a player at Florida State, which I keep a fairly good eye on here on the collegiate game here in the United States. But, yeah, good tournament. Obviously, as a U.S. fan, disappointed because they didn't make it out of the group stage. But, yeah, you know, no, it's still always present how strong the youth of the women's game continues to get throughout each cycle.
Yeah, congratulations to North Korea. Certainly not a surprise, as I said, but I think many expected Japan to maybe have enough to overcome them. Some, as you say, some brilliant football played by the youngsters. And what's interesting is that, like you say, USA didn't get out of the group. I think England knocked Brazil out, or certainly England got through to the knockouts at the expense of Brazil, I think it was. And you see teams at that level who don't necessarily make it into the latter stages when it gets to the senior game, do you? With the exception of Japan, North Korea never really made it far in a major tournament. Spain and Venezuela were in the latter stages as well. It's really interesting to see. It's the technical sides, isn't it? It's the teams that have maybe got more technical ability that make it through to the latter stages at the younger level. And then maybe as the players begin to develop physically, it's the likes of the United States and the Germanys that really come through. But really interesting to watch. And British Eurosport over here did some brilliant coverage and managed to see quite a few of the games. And I know that you got to see a few of them over there as well. So, yeah, congratulations to the Koreans and of course, to all the young players who took part. And you're right, Dana Castellanos, without a doubt, a player to watch. She has got some ridiculous skills and some of the goals she scored were unbelievable. But, yeah, we'll wrap it up there, mate. Thank you very much for your time. I always appreciate it.
Oh, of course. Always a pleasure.
And listeners, as I said at the beginning of the show, we can't do this without you, so really do appreciate you continuing to tune in 3.5 years down the line. If you want to contact us, you can do. We're on Twitter on @WosoZone. If you wish to email us, you can do. We're on WosoZone@gmail.com. And of course, continue to listen to the show through iTunes or audioboom.com/channel/WosoZone. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. So until then, take care of yourselves and bye-bye.